And recording. All right, what's up, Sean?
Oh, hey, Malev.
Look, we're back doing another Relic Buds.
It's beautiful. It's just so wonderful.
It's been a time.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
It is wonderful, though. It is beautiful. There's lots of cool things.
Yeah, I mean, I think I wrote about it in my last newsletter, Relic Blade newsletter, which this is like an audio newsletter in my mind. But yeah, like summer was pretty wild because I got all this like, you know, a family.
Oh, a word.
and so Cora's back in school. And like with that, my day is suddenly structured again.
So
like actually getting up with an alarm clock and going and
doing things,
like markers throughout the day. And I finally figured out a new schedule for my work that I'm really excited about. I decided drop off the kid at school, immediately straight to the gym.
Okay. Like it.
Then I'm in the sauna, getting all like that
sauned,
that energy, getting all like, what's the word? Blissed out.
Mm-hmm. Vibing.
And then that gives me time to like really plan my creative work. And then my plan is when I get home. In the sauna, thinking,
yeah, that's good. That's some real shower thoughts.
Yeah, yeah.
Sauna thoughts.
Yeah, so between swimming laps and sauna, like I've got like lots of time to like do some thinking about what I want to achieve that day. And then I'm doing nothing but creative work until I pick up Cora from school. Because in the past, I would go, I'd like, you know,
like to hear.
Race to pack orders and then end up at the gym at like a random time in the midday, and then maybe have like 30 minutes to start working on a creative project before I have to pick up Cora. And then once I'm home and after picking her up, it's 4:30 and like I need to start making dinner.
Mm-hmm.
And so changing it so that space between picking her up and dinner is like, you know, packing inventory and shipping orders, so that it's ready to go out the next morning, I think is way better, because then I can have finished all this creative work. So that was the theory. And last week was the first week where I was doing it. And it worked really well. I sculpted two new miniatures. And they turned out really cool. And I'm really starting to make some headway on the next Kickstarter
for Relic. Snap. That's good to hear, man. It's important about environment and I guess ritual and enabling yourself to be creative as opposed to sort of just like waiting around for it. You know, I'm gonna feel it.
That's a funny thing, because like creativity feels so like mystical.
Mm-hmm.
Like it comes goes,
but feels then also mystical.
Like you kind of need to also have a structure around it.
Yeah.
So it's like the genie needs the bottle, is how I'd imagine it.
Yeah, you there's some.
Like, without a bottle, a genie is just like 10,000 years of flying around space, looking at stuff and getting distracted on TikTok. But if you put him in a bottle,
it's all about get me out of this bottle, please. You know, I feel it. Yeah. And this is a concept about inspiration and, you know, and talent and this sort of stuff, for motivation is a big one. Inspiration and motivation and like kind of how do they work and where do they come from? And there's definitely, kind of like what you said, there's a mysticalness to it, but at the same time, there is a little bit of a mechanical kind of operative of thing to it. And you really have to invite inspiration. Like, you can't really just wait for inspiration to come around. You got to be like inviting it. And the way that you invite inspiration is generally by doing the work that you are not feeling inspired to do. And, you know, and then in the middle of all that, you know, when you're in the middle of it, that's when you're just like, oh, okay, cool. Yeah. I'm getting these ideas.
I've been in a season of like taking in.
Yeah, me too. Cause after Demon Ships released, it's like, I've been sort of absorbing feedback and then thinking about new stuff and kind of like, yeah, there's an ebb and flow.
So the tide's been going in for a long time, and now finally that I've been like getting kind of stressed. I mean, if I'm going to continue with the tide metaphor, you know, like there wasn't a lot of beach left.
There's just a lot of stuff happening. Like,
up on the high shore. And, you know, I loved watching the waves come in. I loved playing video games, reading books, watching movies, and, like, really taking in the creative stuff. And also, like, listening to lectures. But, you know, for my creative self, I also need to be creating things to, like, really feel fulfilled. And so now, like, the tide is, as I feel like it's turned, and I'm starting to be able to really produce again, which feels really good. But you need both seasons. I do, at least. Like, I can't always be spending creativity and creating new stuff from nothing. But anyways, so I suppose it would be really good to like talk about my plan for the next Relic Blade Kickstarter.
Yeah, and it would
for,
be.
For people, probably a lot of...
Because people will be asking. Everybody's asking.
People familiar with Relic Blade know that I pretty much run a Kickstarter every year. And traditionally, since the second one, I run them in the fall. And so I think based on how much work I've already done and how much work there is left to do, that I'm probably going to aim for an October Kickstarter. And it is going to be two new faction sets for Relic Blade. And they're both neutral alignment, so that will bring it up to four neutral faction sets and four advocate and five adversary, because the Ogsul are the fifth. But so that'll be really nice cool math. So two sets of mercenaries or neutral characters, and one is going to be the Guild Champions, which are the Lotus Guild characters. And I introduced the Lotus Guild in Blaster in 2020.
Yep.
And now I'll probably need to find a new home for that lore, because it's out of print and through Blaster, but it's still like good Relic Blade content. So this might be a good chance to add that again.
Yeah,
but the Lotus Guild are like elves that are use like magic to genetically modify themselves because they like battle pigs are very sensitive to the wild magic in the world, and so when the like really rigidly organized magic structure of reality before the Sundering was in place, the elves were like, you know, kind of more Tolkien style immortal perfected beings. But when that all fell apart, like things really went crazy, and most elves lost their immortality and lost their will to live. And so particularly that old race of elves that were like perfected all died. They just withered. Their will to live was done, and they were done. And so what was left was like a massive population of the young elves who hadn't been...
Don't have like, that perspective yet.
Hadn't been forged by the old magic, and they're like eternally immature. And so some of the elves, a lot of the elves, decided that like in the new world we're mortal and we abide by those rules. And those are the wild elves. And almost all of the elf characters in Relic Blade have been the wild elves.
So far, yeah.
Yeah, so they aren't immortal. They're totally mortal. And they like it that way. They feel like that's the will of nature, and they are shepherded by nature. The Lotus Elves, or the new Lotus Guilds, are not wild elves. And they are exploring all kinds of new ways to modify themselves and become perfected beings. And so I forget exactly how many off the top of my head, but there are several guilds, and there are more that are created, lesser guilds throughout the Twilight Seat area. And they are new ways of being elves. So some of them are more like ghostly shadow elves, and others are more like
the Spectre.
Yes, House Spectre, House Spectre, I think, was one of them, yeah. And House Kestrel was another, mm-hmm. I believe. And they're more like, well, there's all descriptions all of them in the lore. But the cool thing is, so I released one character, the Lotus Blade Song, and there's some cool lore backing that up. But the new set is three Lotus Champion elves and a beast character. And so we have a heron, the Storm Heron, which very is the cool. beast. Yeah, and that was really, really fun to sculpt. I love sculpting animals. You guys know I sculpt that Ibex and the Shadow Fox and the Yak. Really, really love sculpting animals. And so the heron. And then we have an artificer, which is obviously using magic and technology in the line of how the Lotus Guilds are achieving their greatness. And he's got like a pistol, going to be a very cool character, and will finally build out some upgrades for Smith keyword characters. So far, the Battlesmith, the gnome Battlesmith, is the other Smith character so far. And for ages, he hasn't had any upgrades that use the Smith keyword.
Yeah.
But we'll finally see some of the Smith keywords filled out. And then the next character is a spell sword character.
I think it's my favorite of the set.
Talisman.
By the way.
Yeah, and I haven't shown art of that one yet.
No, but you will right here. Boom.
Yeah, I can hold it up.
Yeah.
It's a little figurine, you can tell.
Yeah, no, you got the renders, though. You got the renders.
Yeah, I do. It's sick. So he's like a storm wizard fighter.
Yeah, he's character. Way cool. I like anybody who looks like who could look like a martial artist. So
yeah, artist. And he's got a wand in one hand and a magic blade in the other, but yeah. Not like a sword, not a magic sword, but like a blade made out of magic.
Phantasmal blade. A vorpal sword, if you will.
Whoa. And then the other one is the Starsight, which is a archer that has a gigantic.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Oh geez. Is that one my favorite? I don't know actually now.
The whole set.
Oh yes, the whole set. All three of them.
Between the
that's what's exciting about it, really.
All of it. Yeah.
Is because yeah,
it's a beautiful new
if
set,
really listeners, if y'all have the Voglands book, yeah, we're talking about characters that are exploring very far the southern tip of the Voglands, the Twilight Seat, going inside that place finally and exploring out more, and that's kind of the stuff that was in that's in Blaster.
That yeah, exactly, and so continuing in the like. Exploration of that South Sea area.
Yeah.
There will be another faction set, which I won't go into yet. We can explore. I can tell you more about that in a future episode.
Mm-hmm.
But probably one of the more unexpected, maybe, and exciting things in this next Kickstarter is a new game.
I was going to say, I was like, oh my gosh, I actually forgot about that while we were talking about the characters.
Yeah, part of the core pledge level will be a new Relic Blade spin-off game called Curse Breaker.
Mm-hmm.
And so Relic Blade Curse Breaker is a completely new rule set for a completely different style of gameplay. Like a completely different style game, but that uses Relic Blade figures.
Yeah, it's in the Relic Blade world. Blade world. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So it's kind of like, I mean, it's a little bit like a source book for a region, which in this case, we're going to be exploring the Shattered Lands. And this area is so profoundly changed by magic that the rules...
Is this changed. The source of wild magic in the lore? Like the source? Kind of like the
No, it's not the source.
Not necessarily like, the source, but like the maybe an impact zone of, or it's just a place that happens
yeah,
to just
where be the more it's wild. Where reality is like coming apart and magic is totally disordered into a maelstrom of like displaced from time, displaced from reality, like super, super strong magic. And it's going to be a really cool. The game Curse Breaker is a game for 2 to 4 players. Actually, I guess technically the solo is
built right now. It's for 1 to 4 players.
1 to 4 players. And it is, I mean, I've got a ton to say about it. So,
No, I think it's perfect time to say just
whatever.
Yeah, go for it.
Yeah, so 1 to 4 players. It plays relatively quick, like Relic Blade. You command a single magician. So you can use any wizard model from the Relic Blade range. I mean, technically, of course, you can use whatever miniatures you want. But it's designed, it's in the Relic Blade universe. And so with the faction sets you'll get in this Kickstarter, you'll have 2 wizards and their companions ready to go into the Shattered Lands and Cursebreaker. But also you'll be able to use any of your other Relic Blade wizards as your character. And it's a game where you have command over different lores of magic. And you'll choose which lores you're going to bring, which books of lore you'll bring on a particular adventure. And you'll be rolling dice to discover which actions are available to you, and then spending those actions to really be casting spells in a different way than a normal war game, where a normal miniature war game is oriented toward the combat that's happening among the characters. Like a game of Relic Blade, it's like, you know, you've got heroes fighting in real time against each other. Mm-hmm. Whereas in Cursebreaker, it's more like using your magic and spells to like set up your, you know, zones of control and your areas of denial and your direct damage spells and summoning new monsters. And then as play happens, the enemy monsters will move and then be, you know, vaporized by certain spells if they enter the AoE to it or whatever. So it's very tactical, highly tactical, and the outcomes are all determined. So what's the concept behind the game is that in a normal war game, you perform an action and you roll a die, and the outcome of the action is randomized. But in this game, you roll a die to find out which actions, or in this case, spells you can cast. And then the outcome of those spells is established. There's no randomness to it. So if you cast a lightning bolt, it does a set amount of damage and it automatically succeeds. What's random is whether or not you're going to be able to cast that lightning bolt when you need it.
Yeah.
And so you'll have a certain amount of power dice. You'll roll them and say twos are lightning bolts. If you rolled two twos, you can cast 2 lightning bolts, you know. But in over the course of play, you'll start with just 5 dice, but you'll be gathering more dice as your character is breaking curses and stealing power from your opponent. Like you can full on take dice from your enemy and end up with a whole bunch of dice. And the game is designed so that you play through the 11 scenarios. There are like 11 really cool location-based scenarios that are like locations of power within the Shattered Lands that are cursed by powerful cursed objects. And so the objective is to enter that area and break those curses and take that power for yourself. And so unlike Relic Blade, where you're playing as a seeker, in Cursebreaker, there are no seekers. Like the spiritual or like extraplanar conflict of advocate and adversary doesn't apply there. Like the will of whatever hope for civilization that's happening in the rest of Relic Blade doesn't apply, because in the Shattered Lands there is no order. There is no organized. There, like, it is completely raw magic, and so these wizards are able to enter there and contend with the magic. They might go mad. You might uncover a cursed object and be overcome, and your character for the rest of the campaign will be occupied by powers from beyond. But no seekers. You play as a magician who's seeking their own destiny in the Shattered Lands. So it's a very cool game. I'm really excited about it. I think it's...
It is. I've played it.
A really interesting thing. I've been trying to think of what's analogous to it. Like what... Because, you know, Warhammer has Mordheim. And you sort of use the same figures, but not really.
Oh, you're talking about like
how to describe it.
How it fits into the whole like ecosystem kind of.
What is Cursebreaker to Relic Blade? Yeah. Like Mario Kart to Super Mario Brothers.
Kind of, actually. Kind of. I think that's probably a really good way to put it, you know. And in the same way, the
miniatures don't need to be in cards.
That's true. But you know what? In the same way as kind of like Nintendo, it does actually make me think about that, because one thing that I always think about is interesting, and this is not necessarily a tangent, but we're on the same track with Nintendo, is that they don't necessarily bother to publish other people's games. They just kind of focus on their in-house stuff, and they've just been doing it forever. And it's just like, all right, Mario this time. What's different? He's paper. Okay. I like it. He's paper, you know. He's not paper, but he's flying around the galaxy. Oh, I like that idea. You know, like, there's this element of being able to explore the IP, not only narratively, but also mechanically. And I think that is what Cursebreaker is ultimately a tabletop game that is based in Relic Blade, that is sort of like a side Relic Blade game that, based on playing it, especially because we played it with the Relic Blade stuff that has all of the art that, you know, you guys are looking at us on these like Relic Blade cards here. It's not to say it's all the same, but it's so familiar that it felt like playing Relic Blade in a different way. I would almost say like more zoomed in, you know, because I played the Dark Prophet, and I had in part of the game experience that makes it interesting is that you have access. And this is one thing I also would love for you to cover, is that interesting narrative angle about the magicians not necessarily like that, I guess you call it analogy where you talked about how you've got these guys in towers studying magic all this time, but they've never experienced magic. They're like book wizards, you know? And there's this element of like going into the Shattered Lands with my magician. And I chose the Dark Prophet, and that figure that you drew is just very mysterious, and it's very evocative. And then choosing, she has all of the spell books in her backpack, but it's like, how do you feel for that particular scenario? You pull out like three of, it's three, right?
No, you can do any. So,
oh yeah, yeah. It's your amount of dice that you're limited. Yeah. It's the amount of dice.
You have five power dice.
Yeah. It's the amount of dice that you kind of want to,
which like, I guess would be kind of like action dice in Relic Blade, but they're essentially mana. Mm-hmm. That have to be assigned to a school of magic.
Yeah, so it's almost like
you could assign four of them to the Lore of Fire and one to the Lore of Storms. But then over the course of the game, you'll be getting more power.
More to do. It's kind of like prepare. It's like spell preparation. You know, you're sort of like, you have these books that you've got these spells in, and you're like, I'm going to focus on doing these ones and doing these ones and doing these ones. And you can kind of spread them out or kind of focus in one school and really tailor your play style to do stuff. And yeah, it had such a different feel. But all the while, though, it didn't feel disconnected to Relic Blade, which was cool.
Yeah, and I mean, it's a totally standalone game, but it uses your Relic Blade collection.
And it features all of your art, and it features all of the Relic Blade graphic design, and it features all of Relic Blade like character art. So like, from the perspective of a book and stuff, it's really going to look, when you open the pages, right? I think anybody familiar with the Relic Blade books is going to have that sort of experience. It's really cool. It's really cool. I'll be campaign setting. Yeah.
Yeah. Volklands is a campaign setting that takes place in the Volklands. And like, I want to write, you know, the Storms of Caral and Catacombs of Caral, were two smaller books, but their campaign setting is in the Caral Mountains to the east,
yeah,
southeast. And this is a campaign setting that takes place in the Shattered Lands to the northeast. It's
north, yeah, the northeast.
But the reality of the Shattered Lands is that it's so different that it's a new game.
Yeah.
You know, so when you go to play an adventure in the Shattered Lands, like, your seeker can't go there. But your people can, and as they go, like, you need a magician, because without a magician to contend with the magic there, like, you just would go insane or die, or just be wandering forever in a
apart
from time. You know, your questing knight's just going to end up in a maze.
Yeah. That makes me think of
years ago.
A question. Yeah. How different is the Shattered Lands from the established Fey realms? Because I always thought that was an interesting. So if y'all don't know, there is I don't think we announced this, but we talked about it last time. This new Seeker's Handbook's out on the store. You should check them out. They're great. Because in chart for the Fae Forest, there's one where I think you talked to, I can't remember her name off the top, but you talked to some lady who comes out of the leaves, and she you can buy stuff for her from her.
Yeah.
The Enchantress or something like that. And I think if you roll poorly, you get transported to the fairy courts.
Oh, yeah.
Forever. Yeah. And your character and I just imagined the knight, because it happened one time to one of my knights. And I was just like, my man is just like, his brain and his consciousness has been severed. He's just like, all right, y'all, see ya. Like, I'm walking this. Yep.
Exactly. Yeah. No, the Shattered Lands are not connected to the Fey realm. Or if they are, the portion of the Fey realm that's in the Shattered Lands is severed from the rest of the Fey realm, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I feel you.
Like, the laws of reality are in chaos there. So it'll be really fun. I'm so excited for you guys to be able to explore it. I got really obsessive.
This one's been cooking for a while
about it. And I wrote it, and I did all the book design, and I did a ton of playtesting by myself and with a couple of friends. I'm hoping to get more community playtesters on board. I'll probably organize that through Discord. So if you're interested in playtesting the new game, I'll have like a kind of a closed beta running for a little while. Probably do that through TTS, Tabletop Simulator. Mm-hmm, but for the most part, yeah, Cursebreaker's pretty much done. I think I'm going to do... I did a really cool illustration, and I'm hoping to do like another... maybe some different cover art. I'm not 100% sure. But other than like some cover art and like a couple of little things I could add, that book is done.
I know. When did you start writing that? Because, man, it's been over... I swear it's been over a year. I want to say it's been about a year.
If I click on the Relic Blade folder and then the Cursebreaker folder and then PDFs, I think I deleted the archive PDFs.
Because, yeah.
When was Cursebreaker InDesign created? August. October 26th, 2022.
That should be the date that you launch it.
Yeah,
October 22nd. That's the 1 year, birthday for. Yeah, that's funny because I remember talking about it initially, and there's a lot of interesting things about it, and I think it is really cool. It's fresh because the mechanics and stuff, like, there's this. I would say, for someone who's super familiar with playing Relic Blade, learning Cursebreaker is mostly about just simply understanding what the phases do. because other than that, you get it. You understand everything else.
I think that there's two sides to it, because I think it's kind of a classic Sean Sutter style miniature game where like the core mechanics aren't going to hold you up. You aren't going to be confused about how to play. The thing that's going to get you is that there are a lot of fun options, mm-hmm. you know, like you'll a game, you know, Relic Blade, I think is a little bit deceptively simple. Like, oh, you use your dice to move and attack. And then, but what you're kind of losing in that simplification is like
the way in which all of the options
you have. Yeah, when you get yourself into an awkward position in Relic Blade, you end up making choices, hard choices. And this game is goes way harder on hard choices, because in Relic Blade you'd be like, ooh, I'll make an attack and I hope I crit. This game, there's no crit. You know what you can do and you know what the outcome will be. And so you have to just be.
It's very much a be water, my friend game, because you can know what you want to do in a turn. Like, I would love to get this spell because it's a control spell and then I'll be able to do this. Or if I can get this spell and hit him with this ability that will knock off some health, blah, blah, blah. Based on positioning, that'd be good. But it's all about, you know, when you roll, kind of like, which spells did you get? And then okay, now how can I work with this? Because that's what I found interesting. Yeah. Because in a lot of tabletop games, there's a bit of, not to say that there is foregone conclusions, but when you get into some tabletop game designs, especially skirmish tabletop games where you're just like fighting with six-ish guys on the side, there can be elements where you enter in what appears to be a foregone conclusion about who's going to win or blah, blah, blah. And that kind of looking a turn ahead, looking into the next turn, looking into the next activation, and that being so normal, so just standard for the way that you build strategy, because you're just, that's how these games work. What's the next to move? You know, you look at the board state, you make the next move. And I found it so interesting there in Cursebreaker that I'm still doing that. And then I roll a whole bunch of dice that say, no, you can't do that. And you go, oh, okay.
Yeah.
I have to think about a completely different. And it's interesting too, because it's like, it was like a filter. I was going through my own set of thinking, trying to do that same thing. You know, ooh, I got to do this next turn, got to do this next turn, got to do this. And it would put a certain, like, I'd look at the game state in a very particular biased way, because I had all these things in my head about what I wanted to do.
Other war games.
Exactly. And then when you roll the dice and you don't get those things, then it was like peeling it back. I was like, oh shit. But it was cool, because then it was more about, as opposed to not being able to do what I want to do, it was more about seeing all of these other avenues of things that I could do.
Yeah.
And you just think differently.
Well, what I would compare it to is like Tetris. It's like if you got 5 Tetris bricks, you don't know what shapes they're going to
be.
Once you generate your shapes, then you're like, oh,
this one has to go here. This one has to do this. I wasn't
planning on this, I'm going to build out this whole strategy.
Mm-hmm. That's a great way to think about it. That's because
you know, the way a Tetris brick, where it lands, it doesn't explode and it's not random how it lays out. It lays out a certain way, but which bricks you have and what tools you have
and which rotation you got
does happen. So, so like you end up with like, maybe another comparison is like a hand of cards, you know, you draw your cards and you're like, Oh heck. Oh, and this combos really well. And then you're like, Malev set up a pool of lava and my minions are going to walk in it and die. And you're like, well,
not today.
I have a spell that binds. And normally you'd think a bind spell.
Oh yeah, this is fun.
On an enemy so they can't move toward you.
Yeah.
But instead, you don't want your guys to walk into the lava. So you bind
them. Your own guys. Yeah. There's a lot of.
So then you're like, being like a big brain wizard, mm-hmm. with what options you have.
It is.
And it's really fun. It's very cool.
It's interesting. So
I think, You know, it may not be to everyone's taste, but it's a mind-bending, fun exploration and very true to, like, the Relic Blade, Sean Sutter adventure I've been taking you guys on for all these years is, like, I want to show you the world of Relic Blade. And sometimes we're going to go to a place that uses different rules, and sometimes we're going to go to a place that is going to be, like, an exciting new game experience. And so this is a very, very fun thing. And so through this Kickstarter, you'll get two faction sets with Relic Blade cards that are going to be ready for any kind of normal, you know, Relic Blade adventure, including very cool elves. Like, and you'll be able to take those figures, play Relic Blade, and take those figures and play Cursebreaker and access parts of your Relic Blade collection that maybe you haven't painted yet. You know, your fire elemental's been sitting on the paint bench. Like, Cursebreaker is going to be a great reason to paint an extra basilisk or, you know, some skeletons, extra bone stalkers.
And also, if you guys are like me and you're just behind on all of the Kickstarter stuff that you have to paint, but you do have some wizards in your painted collection, you get the Cursebreaker stuff right there and you just play Cursebreaker immediately.
Yeah, you just paint a wizard.
Yeah, y'all should have at least one wizard in the Relic Blade collection hooked up. Bibliothecary.
This is the one I want to paint next, is the lady.
The Iguan. Yeah. The Iguan witch, so cool. Yes. There's a lot of options, and I think that game is really interesting. Really interesting. There's lots of cool things. I won't spoil them here, but there is lots of interesting things that I like about it. Also, just from, I guess we could say, like, game tchotchke kind of thing. Y'all might know what I mean. When you just get a game and it makes you just want to collect something else to play with it.
Component fun.
Yeah. That's definitely, Cursebreaker has that. Like, I guess in Relic Blade, the closest one I could think of would probably be to trying to get colored, like, sleeves stuff for your cards. Make sure your faction's got their own sleeves, colors, or something of that nature.
Yeah, and because in Cursebreaker, you've got all of the spell books are on cards.
Yeah.
And then there are other cards, like reference cards, and then also a new token set for Cursebreaker. And they're illustrated in the same way as regular Relic Blade tokens, so it'll expand your token collection without being weird. Like, you know, all the components. So
it won't look like a completely different game or something. Yeah.
I mean, it is. It's a completely different game, but also it's in the same universe.
But it won't look like one.
And all the figures you use for both games. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, like, for whatever reasons,
the tokens in this one are character cards.
Yeah. What? You just have health, right?
You have health and that's it for your character. Mm-hmm. You also gain, as throughout the campaign, you gain new equipment. And so that's, I haven't decided if I'm going to make cards for that or just let people write down what they got.
It uses Relic Blade, the Relic Blade figures and, like, your expectations as a Relic Blade person looking into the world. It uses it in a very clever way that I think y'all are going to be really excited about. Because it's just, like, you've used this analogy on, like, podcasts and stuff and interviews where you talk about indie gaming being kind of like a game console. And you can just plug in a new game, like, Cursebreaker is exactly that, like, exactly that, where it's you, not a lot really changes, but everything changes, you know. But you're still gonna play with the same controller, you're still gonna have certain expectations that are exactly the same way, and even some interesting ones where when you're just, like, looking into the Cursebreaker world, you'll see other Relic Blade things, like certain like companions that, you know, you'll be able to use your Relic Blade stuff. It's good.
You'll use your collection, but you also won't have to paint a new
collection.
Just use what you have.
Yeah, it's really cool.
So That's very, it'll be very cool. It's a funny way to do it, because it's not really the way a like business that's trying to get you to buy more stuff would do it. You know, like there's no benefit to Games Workshop if they're like, oh no, just use your Space Marines. We didn't even make new Space Marines.
Yeah. No, we don't even just, we don't
want to. We just have a game, you know.
Yeah. We just want you to have fun. Yeah. You know? Yeah, you know, and speaking of new games, though, I think we get to announce lots of new games here, because we're recording this on August 28th, and which date is when I'm flying? On the 31st, August 31st, I'm going to be flying down to Texas for ReaperCon, which would be fun. I've always wanted to go to ReaperCon, mostly because I know it's always been like kind of painting-centric. There's a lot of painting going on in that convention. I've never really used Reaper paints, though, so it'll be kind of nice to give those a shot on some, like, paint-and-take tables or something like that. But I'm going to be there with Blacksite. We're going to be doing lots of Demon Ship demos and mostly just kind of hanging out, trying to have a good old time. But
yeah, I'm jealous. I looked at flights, and they're way too expensive, like $100.
Yowza. But October 4th, which is, yeah, because if you're announcing, we're both announcing games in October. Hey. Hell yeah. Or projects in October. But my next game, called Pit Lord, that's the working title. I think I'm going to call it Pit Lord, even though I guess I got to keep it Pit Lord, because I was going to say all of the names for my games are they spawn offshoots for different names of different games. Like Demon Ship, we got Ghost Boat, thanks to Ninjon for some reason. And Pit Lord is already a game about dueling barbecue pitmasters, you know? But it isn't. But it is. That's not my game. But at the same time, that's the game every time we talk about it, people are like, oh, sick, you know? And so we end up talking about a lot of...
I was hoping Demon Ship was about dating demons.
That is going to be an expansion, potentially. We'll definitely see. If you... This is the loose state. If you get taken out by the demons, you don't actually die. You just get taken out on the date.
Literally taken out to a nice meal.
Exactly. You gotta roll new rooms, new encounters, gotta roll your pulse.
No, all right, but hang on, we're getting
sidetracked. Anyway.
Pit Lord, what is Pit Lord?
Pit Lord isn't a game about dueling barbecue like meat masters. It is a game about gladiatorial combat, and it is another game in what we're dubbing the Malev Microverse right now, which is kind of just the series of micro games. If y'all are familiar with Demon Ship, Pit Lord is going to be pretty much, not to say identical, but very similar in what you can expect. It's going to play on a 6x6 little area. It's going to use the same kind of for lack of a better term, like Russian nesting doll style box that you can just put the terrain back in. And but this game, where Demon Ship, you play the survivor on a ship filled with demons. There's parts of that game's design that are about that, leaning into that theme. One, the easiest one is that, like, there's no rolling to hit, because you always hit as long as you shoot. And that part is to really lean into the theme of that when you play the Doom Slayer and stuff like that. Like, you can obviously miss in the video games, but the Doom Slayer, if we were writing about him, he doesn't miss, right? He's too cool. And that's kind of, there's elements of that in Demon Ship that are just about giving that experience. And I want to explore, similar in the way that we've been talking about exploring different mechanics and things in the Relic Blade universe with new games, I'm doing similar with kind of this engine that runs Demon Ship is going to be the similar thing that kind of runs Pit Lord. You can expect to be traversing through rooms. You can expect to be kind of setting up little magnetized pillars and walls and things of that nature. But everything, we'll say the tile set will be different, right? All of the terrain is going to be themed differently. Because, yeah, this game, you play the combatant and you are the last surviving member of a tribe of your kind of designation or design. It sort of allows you to play with any sort of martial fighting figure, whether it be historical or from Warcry or from Frostgrave stuff. Just any kind of fantasy figure that is cool could be the combatant, as long as they're on the 25 millimeter base and don't take up too much space and stuff. And you are captured up and thrown into this sort of unknowable alien world that is your kind of nation is swallowed by this encroaching invading army that uses this sort of gladiatorial cultural fighting thing to keep the lower ranks in line. And that's where you, as a unfortunate captor, find yourself as kind of entertainment for these invaders. And you battle throughout the pits, hoping to face the last boss, which is the Pit Lord, the eponymous Pit Lord themselves. And that's the rules of this world, that if you can kill the Pit Lord, you become the Pit Lord. So
it's sort of like the way, correct me if I'm wrong, but it's like if the government is of this like empire, this is, you've got like the executive, legislative, and what's the third branch of government? Heck, I can't even remember right now.
You already said administrative, right?
The House of Representatives. I forget. And Congress. But then there's like a fourth branch of government called like the Pit Lord, right? Mm-hmm. And he's like a figurehead.
Yep.
That represents this like slave underclass.
Yeah.
But as part of being this like slave underclass government figurehead, he has to defend his title against like constant bloodshed.
Yeah.
And so it's like you become a king, but you're the slave king.
Yes.
Right? You're like
the like kind of
empire.
And that the Pit Lord can be kind of anyone, you know, that they, in that regard, it sort of reminds me of kind of like the orcish hierarchy where they're the might makes right. And the Pit Lord is going to be, you know, it's like kind of how you describe it. It wouldn't be a very luxurious life to live, one with where constant strife and always fearing for being assassinated or someone trying to take your place. But at the same time, that's what forges the Pit Lord's kind of steely determination to be the most coolest killer. And to, if anyone manages to get there,
his role,
yeah,
in society is, yeah, to be like the target of, like he's too be assassinated, like you, mm-hmm, he exists.
But in that weird like dichotomy, he's or contradiction or whatever, he's also the most skilled opponent, yeah, because he's killing everybody for the most part. So I think in the story I wrote something like it hasn't happened for, you know, nearly a century or, you know, 50 years or something. No one's managed to actually kill the Pit Lord, but as the combatant, they sort of have this the motivation, because in Demonship, your motivation is quite simply just escape. There is an underlying motivational narrative that I tell people, because a lot of people will say Demonship's hard, I keep dying. And every time they die, especially if they died cinematically in the last phase of the game, you save the universe, because you do manage to explode the ship and stop a demonic incursion. You just don't survive. So you do, you know, you do kind of, that's the empiric victory, you know, but then that's also the kind of motivation, is to escape and stop this incursion. But in Pit Lord, it is sort of this revenge angle, where if your character understands at some point in their journey, I can become the Pit Lord, then that means that at some point, maybe I can get myself into the position to bring this all down or something, yeah, of, yeah, that it's nature. It's
sort of like a bid, like your, mm-hmm, own character's motivation might be a bid to like unmake this
cruel
empire.
Exactly.
But it's like,
yeah. Exactly. And so,
or their motivation might just be to be the baddest
monster. It could be. Yeah. And there, it's an interesting, it's a big shift. And this game's also mechanically, comparing to Demonship's got guns, you know, you're running around, you're putting evades on, but there isn't there's grenades and stuff, but there isn't necessarily like weapon types in the core game. And in Pit Lord, it's much more about moving your feet and swinging your sword. And there isn't going to be rolling to hit, so to speak. It's going to be a game about positioning and kind of, we've been sort of talking them in Cursebreaker, that you know that something is going to happen. You know, in Pit Lord, if you can manage to get into a space and use your short sword to stab into this other space or swing into this other space, that you're going to hit that guy. And this game is about trying to program that movement and program those swings independently of each other or in concert with each other to take out your opponents. But anybody who's familiar with the Demon Ship Pulse mechanic in Pit Lord, it's very similar, but it's called Balance, and it's sort of inverse. You start at 6 balance as opposed to starting at 3 pulse. But you're rolling these dice to see if you get actions, if your opponents get actions, and you're sort of looking at this little engine unfold in front of you. But it should have, one of the big inspirations for me was Heroes of Might and Magic Dark Messiah, I think is what it was called, Dark Messiah. And if anybody's familiar with that game, it was in the heyday of the physics engine, first-person shooters, like Source, Half-Life 2, really popular. It's a lot of physics-based stuff going on. In that game, for whatever reason, you'd enter a sort of fighting room arena, and there would just be spike walls. And you knew, oh, I'm going to kick someone in that spike wall. And this game was all about kicking fools into spike walls, chopping weak support beams on things to make barrels fall down on guys. And Pit Lord is something similar. You're going to be slicing, going to be kicking.
And just like Demon Ship, this is a solo
yep.
micro game, right?
Yeah, solo.
And it's all about like arena combat where you're moving and swinging swords and position. It's like highly position
mm-hmm. yep.
oriented combat with like tons of traps and interactive.
Nope, it's I'm excited about it. And
how many scenarios are there? Like in Demon Ship, there's a certain number of rooms, right?
Yeah, in Demon Ship, there is.
Or is it like 6 arena setups? Or?
Yeah, so in this one, it's going to be unlike, there's going to be 6 still. There's 6 rooms still. But unlike Demon Ship, Demon Ship's about progressing through game stages and finding the correct rooms. And it's sort of MacGuffined in this way that the random room is kind of like the craziness of the ship being in an interdimensional portal. Things aren't where they seem to be. But there is mechanics that have it hopefully feeling like you're running throughout a ship. In Pit Lord, it's going to be, you're going to pretty much roll the rooms and you're going to go through a set of 3. So if anybody's played Catacombs of Coral and you're familiar going through 3 rooms, it's going to be something of that nature. And you're going to go through 3 and the 3rd is going to be the Pit Lord. And should you, so a run in Pit Lord looks a little bit different than a run in Demon Ship. It's going to be about going through a specific set of rooms, but each room, I'm thinking of one of my favorite games, not necessarily to play, but I was always inspired by it, Mortal Kombat, because the strange brutality of that game world always intrigued me. Like at a young age, the pit level on Mortal Kombat, that bridge, y'all know what's what I'm talking about, with the spikes at the bottom. Once I learned that you can knock a dude down to the spikes, and that when a dude fell down to the spikes, there was like heads on spikes, there was like arms, there was all these other people who fell on the spike. You're like, oh my God, that's crazy. That's absolutely nuts. And then later, Mortal Kombat 2 comes out, you get the Pit 2, and it's like similar, but it's got the acid bath in the back with like all these nasty spikes hanging and stuff. And so this kind of like interpretation of what the horrific room to like battle in is kind of where Pit Lord is going. You might have a room that's got more like poison spots.
They're like fight game stages.
Exactly. Cause they're meant for entertainment. So you've got crowds and people that are sort of watching.
So you go through 3 arena fights.
Mm-hmm.
In general, like, how many enemies are you fighting against? Is it one-on-one? Like, are you fighting against Sub-Zero and then Scorpion, or is it like
no, it's waves of... It's the classic, it's the classic, here's a game with rules that you can win, but also we're going to glue the milk bottles together so that you can't knock them over, really. So you're always on your back foot in Pit Lord. You're going to be fighting against multiple opponents, generally, up to a max of three in these little small spaces.
Cool.
But yeah, you'll be rolling around trying to slice.
And what about aesthetics? Tell me, spoil a little, because I think we're getting to the end of this episode.
Yeah, we are. But yeah, for sure.
What about aesthetics? Like, so is the setting like full-on Conan the Barbarian? Is it Rome, like mythic Rome, or is it more like Stone Age, or is it sci-fi, like aliens and humans are barbarians?
So there's actually a couple of different places that are going in my head. There's, because of the combatant's nature to be almost anything, there's a very in my head kind of, I guess for lack of a better term, primitive versus technology kind of angle, where your combatant is thrust into a world that is so different that it might as well be alien. You know, the language that these people are going to be chanting around and the things that the enemies are going to be saying at your combatant, he's not going to understand what they're saying or anything, really. It's all going to just be inferred by the intuitive intelligence of our protagonist. And so there is an element where this invading force, I have depictions of being very brutal, where there's a lot of sort of displays. Like, if you looked at someone, you could tell that in the traditional, like, gladiator sense, that different gladiators have specific gear. Like, the Retiarius has his trident and his net. There's the guy who's got, like, the weird punch arms. They've got all their different things.
Yeah, he's called Punchius. Yeah,
Punchius Armus. They've got all their different roles. It's sort of similar, just kind of like taken to the next, where they're kind of like purpose. They're not purpose built, but these particular people that you're.
But is it
fighting,
like a Mad Max world? Are we? Are
no,
we,
it's gonna in terms of here? In terms of imagining what it would look like. I want the setting where you were sort of captured from to kind of, I see it being cold, I see it being wet, I see it being kind of like England or Scotland, kind of cold, near water. But the place that you kind of end up is kind of warm. I see a lot of like warm tones and stuff, and I think of Persia as depicted in 300 is probably the guiding sort of angle for that, but I want to take it to just a little bit more. There's no way to put this other than just saying it, but just Eternia. Like, I want it to feel strangely sci-fi. Like, the stuff that the enemies have on them might have glowing components, and your character is going to be like, whatever, stab, you know, like it might catch his eye or something, but it's not going to be like, is that, oh my gosh, is that feeding nanites into its bloodstream and enhancing it? Stab, you know, it doesn't matter.
When you say Eternia, you mean like Masters of the Universe?
Yes.
All right, but it's like brutal Masters of the Universe?
In a way, yeah. If you're looking for a particular picture that's perfect, look for the Mobius He-Man.
Mobius He-Man.
Yeah. The Mobius He-Man is, I saw that and I was like, wow. I like.
So you're going to, no, not Morbius. Oh my goodness.
Oh God, it's Morbin time.
Googled, they're like, it's Morbin time.
It's Morbin. Yes, there's a really cool.
Oh, I've never seen that art.
Isn't it sweet?
Oh, so sick.
That's.
Oh my gosh. Is this what you're showing Ben? Is Ben going to sculpt
that's, it? That's what we talked about. It looked about that because I love the way that it's
ready
like.
For this.
It has just a weird, and because some I had kind of more of a traditional Persia,
thought, like 70s sci-fi fantasy world. Mm-hmm. I really like that.
It's got tech that you don't understand.
Pit Lord, I just hear the word Pit Lord and I think, oh, like kind of slaves to darkness, like spiky bits.
Yeah, yeah, right. And but so
like, this is, I want this 70s.
Exactly. So I think when we come up with the. The title card and stuff like that, there's going to be elements, I think, where that's kind of what I want to dive into, this weird like techno fantasy that
just... Mobius did some Dune artwork also.
Yes, the Dune, a ton of those. That was from the Jodorowsky's unmade film, and yeah, y'all should definitely check that out because it's great looking stuff. It's so
that would be really fun inspiration.
It's so like, what the heck is that even, you know? And that's kind of the vibe that I want to get, that there's these elements of it being like, what is that? Like, you know, I really know what like that is. It's a sword, but what is that? You know, like, why does it look like that?
Yeah, like 70s like sci-fi fantasy. Because I just read Dragon Singer, one of the like Fern books by Anne McCaffrey, and it, you know, the cover art sure helps, but like it's that same sort of like era of like it's sci-fi but like really very fantasy, like it's a sci-fi it's an alien world with like human colonists that have created bioengineered dragons, and it's like I also just read A City of Illusions by Ursula Le Guin. And it also has that, like, Earth has been, like, subjugated by an enemy. And, like, they... Yeah. Anyways, so it also has, like, where humanity has become more, like... what's the word? Like
barbaric. Regressed, kind of? Yeah.
Tribal and barbaric and are ruled by this, like, class of aliens that say that they're human and say
they are
pacifist. And so they're like, we never kill. And so the way that they subjugate humans is by, like, forcing them underhandedly, making humans kill each other. But they're like, oh, we would never kill.
And we're, it's like, holy that. Crap,
you guys are the worst. You're the worst government in the history of Earth, in the like 10 million years Earth has had humans on it.
So there's elements of that in Pit Lord, where it's kind of, we're going to explore that, you know, and I'm excited about it just for the sake of combining the mechanics that I want to combine, you know.
I'm so excited to... the little like combat diagrams and like,
oh yeah,
in a similar way, like your move, you move your guy and then your attacks are kind of like Tetris blocks.
They literally will be looking like areas. That. Yep, they will literally look like that.
Certain areas on the grid, and so like, I'm really excited for Pit Lord and for Cursebreaker and for the next couple months of creativity.
Yeah, man. Beautiful. So. We covered a lot here, y'all. We got more to talk about though. So we gotta hit y'all.
Like the new animated intro for Relic Pud.
Oh my gosh, yeah. Which, did you guys like it? Leave a comment. You should let us know, because I think it was great. It's awesome. Big shout out.
Beautiful.
All right, Sean, man. We'll be back soon to talk about.
Yeah, we will. There's a lot more stuff to talk about, especially now that
Kickstart is out. We got more stuff to talk about. Cursebreaker. We got more. We got the second Relic Blade faction that we haven't even drip-dropped on you. Lots of stuff to be looking out for.
Yeah. So follow on Discord. I'll try to keep up with sharing in the newsletter. Like, the Relic Blade newsletter is a nice way to get, like, direct stuff. I'm going to try and use that more because social media is such a disaster. I'd much rather just talk directly to you guys. So if you're not... signed up for the newsletter, you can find that on my website, relicblade.com. I think you scroll to the bottom and jam in a burner email address where you want to get my stuff. But it'll be great. In the words of Malev, much love.
Yes, y'all.
And we'll see you next time.
All right. Peace, Sean. Peace, y'all.